You are listening to The Writer's Voice on The Virginia Voice, and for The Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. The All Henrico Reads program for 2015 selected the book Silver Sparrow by Teyari Jones. As part of the All Henrico Reads program, Teyari Jones spoke in Richmond on April 1st. Teyari Jones joins us on the telephone now. Teyari, you've set your book, Silver Sparrow, in Atlanta, the same location as some of your other novels, Leaving Atlanta, The Untelling. Now, I know you're from Atlanta, but you've lived in Iowa, Arizona, Tennessee, Illinois, Washington, D.C., and many other places. But your books are set in Atlanta. Why?
Well, you can live all over, but there's only one place that's home. And I am a Georgia peach. I was born downtown, you know, in Atlanta, downtown, right in the middle, in the city limits. And so I really feel that that is the place where my imagination lives. When I imagine a story, that's where the story is.
Without giving away too much, because we want people to read the book if they have not already, tell us about Silver Sparrow.
Silver Sparrow is the story of two sisters. However, only one sister is aware of the relationship because the father is a bigamist. And I always say this is the lying, cheating kind of bigamy, not the religious type of bigamy. And I have always thought that, you know, you hear about when men have secret families and the two wives meet for the first time at the funeral. I think that very often there is one woman and her child who have agreed to live in the shadows. So I wanted to tell the story of the sister who's known all along that she can never tell anyone her father's name, and then the sister who finds out.
At the same time, haven't we kind of all fantasized about having a sister or a brother we didn't know we had, or perhaps an unknown uncle who leaves us $1 million in his will?
I think we all fantasize about finding relatives, but we don't fantasize about finding scandal, you see. Like your secret uncle that leaves you $1 million isn't because your father has been cheating on your mother systematically for the last 15 years. You know, it's a really different kind of manifestation of the truth.
The book is about nothing so much as relationships, which all the characters in your book describe as complicated.
Oh, well, all relationships are complicated, but this idea of the secret father or the secret family, it's terribly complicated because on the one hand, you have a man who feels that he could have abandoned, you know, this family, but he didn't abandon them. He actually tried to, in his mind, he feels that he tried to do the right thing twice by taking care of both women and their children. But of course, it's built on deception, but it is true. He is present in both lives. So I feel like that's a very complicated moral ground upon which he stands.
You mentioned already that the very first line in the book talks about the father being a bigamist. Is that giving away a lot?
Well, here's the thing. This is how stories work. You can either find out that the father is the bigamist and that's the story, or the story can be what happens when the father is a bigamist. So you never give away the plot. You never give away the book in the first line, but you can give information without giving it away.
Teyari, I was only concerned that by saying that in the first line, you almost foreshadow the plot is going to be a disaster. For some family, some part of the family.
Everyone can't win. That's the truth. You don't know how, you don't know what the disaster is going to look like. They're like, what is that they say? There's one way to be happy and millions of ways to be unhappy. I feel like disasters are like that. There's so many different disasters.
I love you. This is a great book, too.
Well, thank you.
You weave a lot of history into the book. You mentioned Alex's Barbecue was prominent in the civil rights movement, and you bring that in several times.
Well, you know, Atlanta is, you know, Martin Luther King's hometown. So growing up in Atlanta, that story, the story of the civil rights movement is always in the air. And I feel like our lives, all of our lives intersect with history, really. I feel that Atlanta and also Memphis are two towns where the people are very self-conscious about their role in that particular history.
The story is about two teenagers and their families. What do you hope people will, who do you think people will identify with? Because there are people of all ages in the book. You can identify with teenagers if you're a teenager. You can identify with the married people. You can identify with the unmarried bachelor.
I think that you, as people often ask me, how did you write, you know, how do I write young people's voices so convincingly? And I tell people that I used to be a young person. For years, I was a teenager. And I feel that, and that's the thing, that we can all identify with all the characters. But the main thing that I hope people will think about when reading this book is about being open to children or young people in various situations. When I went on tour for Silver Sparrow, I did almost 100 events, and I met people all over the country whose fathers had secret families. I met people who were the secret son or the secret daughter, and how they grew up with shame and how little compassion there is, even how there's no positive language to speak of yourself if you were conceived in a relationship where your father was married to someone else. There's no nice word to say who you are. And I realize that all around us are people that you think you know every day, and they have this secret shame. And I really want to address that. And that's what I think is the best thing to happen as a result of publishing the book, is having these conversations.
I wanted to ask you what you hope people will take away from in this book, but you mentioned your public tours, your book signings, and meeting people, and you gave us a kind of a little hint of what people talk about. Go into a little more depth on that. What do people say to you? Do they say you've caught my family perfectly, or what do they say to you?
Well, the most moving thing that happened was I was in Milwaukee, and I had gone to, I had done a book signing, say, in September, and then I came back to do another signing in May. And when I returned in May, a woman gave me something, and she said, please don't open this until I've gone. I said, okay, I was very busy. I was signing a lot of books. And I opened it, and it was a photograph of her and some other people, and they were all holding the book. And she had written a letter saying that her father had, when her father died, it was discovered that he had all these other children and that they did not have a way to talk and communicate, and that she had bought the book for everyone, and they had like a little book club to talk about the book, but also to talk about themselves. And it made me feel like this book was written for this particular family. Like that, you think you know why you write a book, but once the book is out, you can have an experience that shows you why you were called to that book. I feel like this book was a gift to that family.
That's a delightful story. You answered this question a few moments ago before I asked it, but encapsulate what you hope people will take away after they read this book.
I hope that after we read this book, that we will remember that every person is legitimate. There is no such thing as an illegitimate person. Everyone is legitimate.
In the book, you talk frequently about the various children, many of whom can't claim they have a father.
Right, yes. I mean, it's a very complex thing, and it's so much more common than we would think. I feel that as a culture, we completely accept that affairs happen, but for some reason, when we think of the children that are a result of affairs, we can't believe that they exist. I want to tell everyone, people, that's where babies come from. That's how this works. So there's so many children out there living in shame. So many. Every time, if I go to a book event, and there are at least 20 people in the room, I know that someone there is a Silver Sparrow.
Yeah, I was tempted to play Bridge Over Troubled Waters behind this interview. Sail on, Silver Bird.
Yes, I tell you, it's so funny how you just never know what. I always, songs, music connects with me whenever I'm writing a book. And when I heard that, it just really connected with the kind of feeling of the novel.
Janetta Cole is currently the director of the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of African Art. But you credit her with inspiring you at Spelman College.
Yes.
How did she do that?
I went to college super young. I was only 16 years old, and I like to say that I was, in many ways, what I call an invisible girl. I was a nice girl. I was bright. I was considered to be bright. You know, I made good grades. But I think that when girls like to read and write, people don't necessarily think it means that you're an intellectual or a writer. I think they think it means that you're nice. You know, like a nice girl. Like no one ever got pregnant in the library. So, you know, you're just nice. And when I went to Spelman, I met Janetta Cole, and she spoke to me as though I were a budding intellectual. She called me a writer, and it changed the way that I understood my own interests and ideas.
And you went on from there. You've written at least 3 novels. I know you're working on more.
I'm working on a fourth, or should we say that the fourth is working on me, yes.
I love that. I don't want you to give away what you're working on now, but you were inspired, and your first couple of novels, talk about them too.
Well, my first novel is called Leaving Atlanta, and it's about my experiences growing up in Atlanta during the Atlanta child murders. About 30 African-American children were kidnapped and murdered during that when I was a kid. And I wanted to write a novel not about the case, not a whodunit. I just wanted to write about what it was for those of us, what it is to, like, think about a serial killer and your training bra at the same time, because we did all the things that other little kids did, but we also had this other problem. And I just wanted to document our generational experience growing up, because everything else I had read about the case was all about who done it, the police were the star, and I didn't want to write about the police. I wanted to write about a community.
And in The Untelling?
The Untelling, it's kind of a sad novel in many ways. It's a novel about a family that was devastated by a car accident. Half of them lived, half of them died. And it's about the ways they try to put their lives back together.
Are you doing anything other than writing at the moment?
Oh, yes. I'm a professor at Rutgers University in Newark. I teach creative writing, and I also teach literature.
Are you talking about a tremendous commute? Aren't you living in New York?
It's a significant commute. I have learned to try to pass the time, but I just felt that if you move all the way from Georgia to New York, you can't live in New Jersey. So I moved to Brooklyn last week.
Wow. You don't even know your neighbors yet.
I don't, but I met some really nice people. I tell you, New Yorkers are nicer than their reputation.
Interesting. People who have never been to New York have an image of what it's supposed to be like, perhaps from what they see on television.
Well, I actually have a couple of cultural theories about New York, and what I think is that in the South, we have a different baseline of what we consider to be polite. So New Yorkers think Southerners are fake, because you know how a Southerner will say, how are you, how your mother, how they feel like, she asked about my mother, she doesn't even know my mother, she's insincere. But we think it's just politeness. You know, so it's just a matter of learning to interpret their behavior. But when you first meet them, they are off-putting. You think they hate you, but they don't. That's just how they are. They actually like you.
Even though your hometown is Atlanta, you probably haven't lived there in a while, but is it culture shock between Atlanta and New York?
Oh, my goodness, absolutely. And also, they make fun of your accent. Yes, no, it is. It's really something to be. When I first got to New York, I called somebody ma'am, and she didn't know what I was saying because she had never been called ma'am. She thought I was calling her name. It was confusing. Yes, it's really something.
Tayeri Jones, thank you. The book is Silver Sparrow by Tayeri Jones. It's the 2015 All Henrico Reads book. Tayeri Jones has been with us on the telephone. This is The Writer's Voice on The Virginia Voice. And for The Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.